This is the most marvelous book, and if you have a chance to get it, I would certainly do so. It's Love Poems from God, and it's 12 Sacred Voices from East and West, and over the centuries. And these are mystics who have, through their lifetime, written and sung many of these poems. And they are, for me, so beautiful. And because they come from so many different points of view, it really allows us to see how the divine so perfectly expresses itself in every era, in every person, and throughout life, whatever the life might look like for this individual mystic. And I love St. John of the Cross. I spoke about him earlier, but just for those people who had not heard about him. He is recognized as one of the world's greatest mystic poets. His verse reveals profound, tender experience of divine communion. He grew up in a small town. He eventually ended up at a Jesuit school. He was a very excellent student, and because he learned Latin, he decided that at the age of 22, he wanted to go and to a university, which he did, and it was the University of Salamanca. When he was 25, he had a very decisive event because he met St. Teresa of Avila, whose poems I've also read. And when St. Teresa met him, it was like these two extraordinary energies coming together, because she had, by that time, she was in her 50s, and she was very full of that divine awareness, and the purity of John and the purity of Teresa allowed them to have so many different levels of communication. And she said of him, "He is the most angelic human being I've ever encountered." Then he became a Carmelite friar and wanted to bring some changes, because he felt that that particular order could sort of, as we would say, revamp itself and come from the Middle Ages into the present time. And as a result, he was kidnapped actually, put into a monastery in the basement, in a closet, and there he suffered great torture. And the monks actually tortured him to such an extreme that he was completely crippled and was never able to walk again. And during that time, he wrote, and the monks gave him paper and pen, and he wrote some of the most beautiful poems that he wrote in his whole life. And he prayed to God and said, you know, please, to give him the strength to endure his confinement and his torture. And he had a remarkable experience, and he had a vision. And it was a duet between God and he. And the words were, "I am dying of love, darling. What shall I do?" And the beloved responded, "Then die, my sweetheart, just die. Die to all that is not us. What could be more beautiful?" And the Prophet Muhammad had said, "Die before you die." And others have said, "Die 1,000 times before you die." And Maher Baba, some of you know, he was right over the mountain, Maher Baba, and he said, "Being is dying by loving." And we have emphasized in the talks that we've had about the nature of being as opposed to the nature of doing. And when you come into being, how you come into being is to recognize who you are on the inner and on the outer, and that the divine dwells in you, and that the love which you are creates that place of being that is so very profound. And as we let go of anything which is less than love, of course, that which we release dies, does it not? And the ego says, "I'm dying, I'm dying." And we say, "Thank you. Let us keep working until it's finally gone, and it will finally die." So that is the dying of which this speaks. All those things which are less than love. And haven't all of us had a little bit of dying? I would hope so. That's why we're here in the room today, because we know about the dying. So here is his poem. "The weight of arrogance is such that no bird can fly carrying it, And the man who feels superior to others, that man cannot dance. The real dance, when the soul takes God in its arms and you both fall onto your knees in gratitude. A blessed gratitude for life. The next gentleman, I really love him. His name is Tukaram, and he was 1608 to 1649. He was the most influential figure in the Maharithi literature and probably the most famous saint to write in that language. His poems were poetic songs of teaching and devotional nature. He was an extraordinary man. Many miracles are attributed to Tukaram, and he is often compared to Saint Francis, as the animals and birds so loved him and he them. Birds often rode on his shoulders and sat on his musical instrument, which he kept slung around his neck when not playing it. With cymbals in hand and ecstatic tears on his face, he could be seen in the streets, dancing and singing his poems to God. Let us be that way and sing those songs, please. And then one day, he was walking with some of his close, the ones who were close to him, and about halfway down to this village they were going to, he stopped, held their hands, looking deeply into their eyes, and with remarkable love, tenderly kissed each person and then walked off alone and was never seen again. The woman or man whose speech and actions are the same, his, her feet, become worthy of worship. Keeping our word is the alchemy to become free and whole. Try and make amends for any broken hearts or broken promises. If you cannot do so in form, then prayer will heal a debt with the light you can send. And even we can become this precious gold. For me, and Teresa of Avila also speaks about this, that if you cannot be with the person with whom you want to make amends or with whom you have work that you need to do to clear the energy, you can do this by sending your light to them and holding them in your heart. Because often, and I can only speak for myself, there are individuals who've passed to the other side, my mother and father being two of them, and there were things that I never was able to say to my mother that I wish that I could say, never said things to my father that I wish that I could have said while he was in embodiment. But in the light, in the formless, I can go right to them. They are there, awaiting, and I can say everything that I have ever wanted to say to them, I get to say to them. And in return, I know their presence, their light that is coming unto me. This isn't a one-way street. Now, for those who have difficulty in saying, well, how can I do that? Okay, this is how I do it. I'm sure there are many other ways. I still myself. Usually I do it with my eyes closed, but I can do it with my eyes open. And I bring forward my mom and dad. And they come. I know their energy. I know their vibration. And they do not come looking like mom and dad in the physical embodiment. They are an energetic presence that I can actually, I know I can differentiate all the souls, one from another. And then I say to my mom, I would say to her, Mom, these are the things that I never said to you, and I want to say them now. And this was after she passed and after my dad passed, and I realized that I had expressed gratitude for all the encouragement that she had given and given me. And I wanted to really let her know the fullness of how much appreciation I had for her. Because even at the end of her life, when I would say to her, Mom, you did such a great job raising all of us. You really did. And she said, oh, no, Mary, I didn't. I just didn't realize. And I said, oh, no, Mom. I said, please, you've got to understand, we each had, each child had their own way of having to go out into the world, but you helped all of us go out into the world and become who we are. I said, we couldn't have done it without you. And so her sense that in some way she hadn't fulfilled being the mother to us. And the same thing with my dad. He was very reserved, had a huge, great, big energy, and I felt, anybody have a dad like that? Fabulous, teeny weeny. So I grew to the point where I could look him in the eye, you know, big enough to do that. And I realized that there were things that I really wanted to say to him. And the beauty was that doing it in the formless and sending my energy, that light, that love to him, the energy that I received was so incredible. And from time to time, and I'll share this one experience I had after I had done my work with Dad, I was in meditation. And you know how, some of you do probably, when you look at a pipe organ, how the pipes are sort of in a pyramid shape? And I saw this shape. Come in. No, not at all. I'll just hold this thought right here, like this. And Michelle will get a chair and everything will be fine. Yeah. Just scoot out a little and we'll put one more chair in. We're talking about working with individuals who are in the formless, who have passed to the other side, and how we can complete or work with or speak to them in completion of things that we hadn't said while they were in the body. And so I'm speaking about an experience I had with my father after he passed. And I was saying that I was shown an energy where it looked like a pipe organ like this that you would see in a large church. And as I was aware of that, coming down in the formless, because this is all happening in the formless, was an energy field that had the exact opposite shape, and the two shapes came together as one shape. And it was so beautiful. And I said, Dad, you know, because I knew it was his energy. And I was, it just touched me so deeply that I would be able to receive a vision of that consciousness and that union of his energy with my energy, which in the lifetime he had been so worried about me because my other siblings, you know, they were going to follow the track of business and so on, and I was the artist. And my father had said to me, you cannot become an artist. And I said, well, why not? And he said, because you'll end up being an old lady with no friends. Now, that was his idea of a really bad life. And then I had to say to him, well, Dad, if that's what's going to happen to me, then I will accept it. But I have to go and do what I have to do. I'm sorry. I have to do it. And he realized then that I was totally focused on what I was about. And it didn't make any difference how bad the scenario was going to be at the end of my life. I really knew I had to do it. But he had to hear it with that level of energy before he could really believe it. And he would say to me, oh, well, I've met so many artists and, you know, they're so unhappy and they're so this, that, and the other. And I said, Dad, this may be true, but not for me. I said, I'm a happy camper. I'm going to go out, going to do my thing. So in the use of light to be able to work with both individuals who are in form and formlessness. Now, there have been people in my life who are still in my life, and energetically, I've been able to work with them in the light and hold them and embrace them. And I'll give you an example. I had a friend who had asked something of me and something I could not do. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't do this for you. And 7 years went by. And she never spoke or wrote to me. And I would always send her light and love. And at the 7th year, she wrote me a letter. And she said, now I understand why you couldn't say yes to that request all those years ago, because now it has happened to me, and I have to say no. And she said, so, could we be friends again? And of course, I said, yes, because we had already prepared the energy. I had not turned away. I had said, if I can't see her in the physical, then I want to work energetically in the light with her and hold her in my consciousness, in my heart, and know that that was absolutely the most powerful thing I could do. Now, while I've been talking about it, I see some of you are going in and working energetically. And if there is anyone, I mean, I have so many experiences, but one of them, which I really appreciate, I had with the Buddha. And the Buddha came to me and said, I want you to work with me for 3 years. And I said, okay, I can do that. Now, you might say, well, how did you know it was the Buddha? And how did the Buddha talk to you like that? Well, that's because I know the Buddha's energy. And because I had come, when I came into this embodiment, I brought with me, as all of us have, strands of consciousness that we have woven into this lifetime. And some of them we haven't put much attention on, and others we have put a great deal of attention on. And when the Buddha came to me and said that, I acknowledged that this was another step in my awakening to be able to have the 3 years. And the Buddha said to me, do you think that we just hang out here in the formless? I said, well, actually, I don't really know. And I was, you know, pretty young when this happened. And the Buddha said, the evolution of the consciousness that goes on in the formless is very profound. And everyone who passes into the formless then begins to do another level of what I call the work. And the work is what they specifically are expanding their consciousness around. So if you look at Buddhism today on the earth plane, it is very different than it was 50 years ago, or 100 years ago, or 1,000 years ago. It has evolved. And that evolution has occurred because those who are coming into form are carrying the new levels of energy. And so the work is being done in the formless, and then we get the privilege of being on the earth plane with these incredible beings who are bringing the next level of that energy forward. And for me, I mean, I don't know if you all know Thich Nhat Hanh, who is the wonderful Vietnamese Buddhist teacher. His focus is mindfulness. And if you'll know, one of the first meetings we did, the washing of our hands in mime, to bring mindfulness to it. And he's so wonderful, and I hope this will not offend anyone, but it's in one of his books, so I figure I can talk about it. He said, I love to go to the bathroom and urinate. He said, because when you do it mindfully, it becomes a completely different experience. And when I read that, I said, this guy and I are on the same track, you know? He talks about mindfulness in how you brush your teeth, mindfulness in eating, mindfulness in walking, mindfulness in being present everywhere and at all times. Now, if he had reincarnated even 50 years ago, they probably would have said, no. You just go and pray through this embodiment. Nobody wants to hear what you have to say. He had to incarnate, go through a tremendous struggle in Vietnam and see the most horrific atrocities and monstrosities of what was happening. And he was so moved by that. He said, what can I say? And how can I say it so that I can touch people in all cultures? And it's not about a religion or a particular faith or a particular thing that you have to say it's only this way and no other. And so he came to that place of realization around mindfulness and how extraordinary it was if you really, really live in mindfulness. And he talks about eating that way and walking that way. He has a wonderful story. He and someone, another quite evolved being, they were walking down the path and they were going to eat an apple, each of them. And Thich Nhat Hanh was holding his apple, and this other gentleman began to eat his apple, and they were walking. And Thich Nhat Hanh very gently said to him, why don't we walk? And then we will stop. And then we will eat our apple. So everything came from that place of mindfulness, being so mindful of everything that we do. And often, I don't know how it is in your world, I used to be a multitasker, I mean, big time. I mean, how many things could I do at once to get it all done? And particularly when you run a dance company, I'll tell you, there are about 6,000 things you have to do at once. And what I realized through Thich Nhat Hanh was that if I put my focus on each one of the myriad tasks and completed and then completed, or gave to another and said, would you please do this for me, which was a huge big thing for me back in those days, to ask for support, which we talked about last week. So it's that realization of the mindfulness of every single moment. So let us say that when you go home tonight, you might urinate tonight, I don't know, when you get home, or you might eat something and then brush your teeth, or you might say, even taking the covers of the bed and mindfully opening them, and then mindfully getting into bed, mindfully putting your head on the pillow, then mindfully bringing the covers up to whatever, you know, your most favorite position is in the bed, and then prepare to sleep. Now, I've been doing this for a number of years, and I love my bed. Does anybody else love their bed? Oh, I love my bed. My bed is just, you know, it's just the divine made manifest in this fabulous bed as far as I'm concerned. And I love it. And I have a heated mattress, which I hope we all had here tonight so we can stick our feet under it. And I turn my mattress on, so I get my mattress cover really warm. And then I just, you know, mindfully get in. And I thank the sheets and the mattress and the pillow. And, you know, I get my arms just in the right way. I like to sleep with my hands on my heart. So I get my hands on my heart, and then I'm gone, just like that. And when I wake up in the morning, sometimes the covers have not moved. I'm still there in that position. And sometimes I have, but it just depends. So if you look at the wonder of being an embodiment, this is loving every moment of your embodiment and not saying, oh, do I have to do that again? How many of us have ever said that? I don't really want to do that again. Raise your hand. Don't be afraid to raise your hand. If you don't raise your hand, you're not telling the truth. Okay. All of us have said, there are things that we really don't want to do again. And my experience was that the divine said, we will do this, darling, until you love it. And I said, well, I want to love it really fast, so let me get this going. So if you think back to how, when you don't love something, you're not mindful around it. How could you be? Because all you want to do is either do it as fast as you can or without that place of consciousness behind it. You know, where you're really conscious of what that is that you're doing and how does that affect you? What is the effect when there is no mindfulness, and what is it when you are mindful? Now, you could take this a step further and say, well, you know, you could become absolutely obsessive compulsive around being mindful. I mean, this is very true. You could. And the balance is how you can take those things every moment of your day and do them in a loving way. Because as you are doing them in a loving way, it softens the energy so that you approach everything with that awareness within yourself about what that is that you do. Now, I'm wearing a garment that was made mindfully. Now, how do I know that? Because when I look upon it, I see that every artisan and artist who put this together had to be mindful. It could not be thus without the mindfulness. And when it was complete, and everyone went, aha, but what was really going on was thanks and gratitude for the mindfulness that went into the creation. Now, some of us here are artists. Many of us have been teachers at one time or another. Many of us have absolutely incredible lives. If we went around and said, tell me your story in 3 sentences, which we might do tonight. So, first I was born, and then I was in trouble, and then I got mindfulness, and then I woke up. How many words was that? 5. Okay. At the end of the trail is mindfulness. Okay, so if we are in that place of moving in mindfulness, and perhaps in this embodiment we say, I really want to be awake. Would everybody be embarrassed if I asked how many people want to wake up in this embodiment? How many people want to wake up? Everybody wants to wake up. Yay, team. Yeah, I'm with you. Stick that arm up there. All right. Now, the divine said to me, and forgive me, what is your name?
Dan.
Okay, Dan. Dan, I'm a mystic, and I had a mystical experience when I was a little girl that brought me into union and communion with the divine, and I have the voice within. So when I say the divine speaks to me or has spoken to me, that's the truth. And so these folks are pretty used to it now. But you may say, who is she talking to? Okay, so don't be upset that I'm in doing this. I don't think you're upset. You look really smooth and cool and so on. Okay. So the divine said to me, if you want to wake up, there's only one thing you have to do. Give thanks unceasingly. No matter what. Give thanks unceasingly. Now, when I first heard that, I said, but I don't want to give thanks for that. That really bugs me. I don't like that. I didn't like this or that. And the divine said, no. Unceasingly. Unceasingly. How many people saw the sunset this evening? Raise your hand.
Yeah.
Holy shamoly. It was, you talk about a light show. I mean, the divine put it on. And guess what color was in the sky? Turquoise was in the sky, and the corals and the pinks and the oranges and the gold. And I said, oh my God, how you do, oh my God. And in praise and thanksgiving for such a spectacular moment. And it just takes my breath away. And yet I know that each one of us is as bright and clear and present as that sunset. We all are that. But most of us forget that we are that. We forget it. Why do we forget it? Because the ego conscious mind never, ever, ever wants to be out of control. And you have to relax to be in the wonder. Now, if my ego conscious mind was looking at the sunset, it'd say, well, I don't like the way those colors work over there. That doesn't work for me. I don't know why God did those colors. Now, if I were doing it, you know what I'm saying? No matter what it would be, the ego would want to control, manipulate, protect, defend, judge, criticize. I mean, that's what it knows how to do. That's its job. Now, one of the questions that someone gave to me was, what is the purpose of the ego? Okay, we have to go back to our fundamentals. We come to the earth plane to work and learn through polarities. And here is soul, God manifest through us as soul. And we have to have a polar opposite. Well, howdy do. There's the ego who said, well, I'm just very happy to take that position. I really love that. Now, the ego, as you know, only wants the past and the future. It never wants to be in the present. So the storyteller, who is your ego conscious mind, is going to tell the story over and over and over again. How many people have repeated stories? Raise your hand. I have repeated stories. Okay. I have stories that are repeated and repeated. And finally, I said to the ego, you know what? I don't believe I want to hear that story again. So I want to thank you for that story. And I honor that that's your job and you're doing it magnificently. But I want to thank you for that story. And I no longer hear that story. What I'd rather hear is the story about that I can give the ego another story to tell, because that's what it wants to do, and it's part of its function on the earth plane. But by thanking it, rather than trying to whip it into silence, which would never happen, just to be able to say thank you, because you are God too. Here's my soul, expanded, open, receptive, giving. And here's my ego, closed, tight, and holding. Holding on, holding on. And little by little, aspects of your ego must die. This is what we've talked about. Parts will die. And as they die, look what happens. And when you are awake, then this happens. Your ego is in alignment with your soul. and there is no separation. That's the awakened state. There is no split between the ego conscious mind and that which is the divine through your soul speaking other truths. And when you see and begin to feel that movement, you realize that each little death that has occurred with your ego has been a precious gift, a precious gift. And to thank and honor that yet one more thing has died, but through your love, you have allowed that dying to occur. Because if you love to find out what's wrong with everybody, anybody ever have that happen to them? Yeah, we used to find out what's wrong with them instead of what's right with them. Well, if we let go of something like that, we don't acknowledge the wrong anymore. We look for the right. What is the clear, beautiful, sentient energy inside that person? Then that part of that judgment that's so deeply within us will simply die. And we will not reference it again. We will never look on another person again and try and find fault with them in any way. We will simply be present with who they are. And this is accepting everybody just the way they are. And this is a huge way of awakening to really, really and truly give thanks. I came from a very judgmental family. Anybody else have that experience? Raise your hand. Don't be worried. I mean, see, if we do this enough, it'll keep us going. Keep us warm, you know? And then we can do a little of this. You know, this thing that we used to do, the jive. Okay. So, if you come from a judgmental family, you are deeply imprinted that judgment is good. Because that's what Mom and Dad said, right? So we're going to judge, judge, judge. And as I began to grow in my consciousness, I began to realize that that was such a small, tight box. And the walls of the box had been built by all the judgments. Not these people, not those people, not this thing, not that thing. And I couldn't do that. And so I would go out and live my life, and then I would come back, and everybody in the box would say, bad girl. And I'd go, I'm a bad girl. But I could not stay in the box. And all of us who are in this room have stepped out of at least one or two or three boxes in our lifetime to get in this room. This is very clear, yes? So now we're in a place where the walls have collapsed because we're not seeking to judge the other. We are seeking instead to have compassion, to have understanding, to have love, to be able to embrace the differences. Now this is huge. To encompass in our consciousness and with our compassion the differences and understand how wonderful they are. I mean, one of the jobs I had was as a guest artist in Japan. And this was during the Vietnam War, and they weren't sending dance companies, but they had artists who could go. And so I was one of the artists that went. And you look at me now. Okay, my hair was much shorter, and I'm as white as I am, and I'm in Japan. Okay. And I was living in Nukanuku, which is a little residential area in outside of Tokyo, and I had to get on the subway and go to the various dance studios that I was going to be teaching and choreographing in. And so the first day, bravely, I used to speak just enough Japanese to get by, and I had found a wonderful Japanese couple that helped me do all this and learn how to bow properly and so on and so forth. And so here I am, and as I walked down the street to get to the subway, all the little children went, ah! And they screamed and they ran behind their mamas. And the mamas went, because they had never seen a gaijin, round eye. Never seen one, and here I was in this little suburb where there had never been me, but anyone like me before. And the kids thought that I was, you know, I could be a monster, or I could be a devil, or I could be a witch. I mean, how, you know, who was this? And I was quite taken aback, but I thought, well, I got my job to do, so I'm going to go do it. And I got to the subway all right, and got down there, and then got to the right stop. And like many of the big cities, there are probably five exits right? All going to different streets. So I'm like the gopher. I go up one, look around, oh, then look right down. All right, I'm doing this whole routine. Finally, I go up, I go, I said, I just got to get out of here because I don't know where I'm going. And of course, I'm the only guy, Gene, on the train. And this was, you know, in the very early 60s. So the 50s hadn't really, I mean, people, the ladies were still in their kimonos and everybody was still in that old energy. I come out and I say, well, I'm just going to start walking. And hopefully, you know, something will happen. I have to have trust and faith. And I did. And a young man came up to me, and in very broken English, he said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going here. He said, I will show you. And I said, oh, that would be so wonderful. And he said, and will you speak English with me so I can practice my English with you? I said, yes, I would love it. So, letting go of all differences, and so grateful that I had this opportunity. And so he takes me to the dance studio. Get to the dance studio, and I thought, this is going to be so interesting. And everybody was lined up, you know, and they're very, you know, straightforward and ready to go. And so I thought, all right, I'm going to do, in dance, you can just demonstrate. You know, it's wonderful. You don't even have to speak the language. But, and because I was a dancer, you know, I started counting the measures. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4. And they all went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4. They did it. They were all counting in English. And I went, hallelujah. But you see, opening up to whatever it looked like. If nobody spoke English, we were still going to muddle through and have a great time. Because what? They were willing to accept me. And I was willing to accept them. And we were just in a process of creation. We just wanted to create. And it didn't make any difference that we couldn't speak the same language or any of those things. That was not there. What was there was something that encompassed all of us. And we embraced it and we loved it. And we had such a good time. So each of us in this room have been in situations where we have been invited, have we not, to embrace something what we thought, what is this going to be? And instead of going, ah, and the ego conscious mind jumping in and starting to criticize or judge what it is, to be able to just say, I'm here. I will embrace whatever this is. And in so doing, even if the other was holding judgments toward me, that I can accept. I don't mind if people judge me. I understand where it's coming from, so it doesn't have any effect on me. But the beauty was, when I was able to accept, then they realized that they didn't have to have their walls, you see? They could feel the change in the energy. I didn't have mine, so they didn't have theirs. And so something else could happen. Now, we've all had moments like that in our lives where the surprise was that we were willing to be present, okay? So, if we want to wake up, and the Divine said, all you have to do is give thanks, then for me, this was a continuing thank you. Every place I went, it was just, you know, domo arigato gozaimashita. I mean, I was just, you know, I was bowing to everybody, you know. Finally, someone came up and said, you know, you don't have to bow to everybody all the time. I said, well, I just want to show them what respect I have for them and what love. One more story about Japan, give you an idea. It was still very traditional culture, and I was invited to a home to eat, which was a very, very amazing occasion for a gaijin to go and eat. But I was a sensei. They said I was the teacher and they were going to have me at this home. So, you know, I took my shoes off and I bowed. And I'd been taught a lot about how to do it. And I wasn't really good with chopsticks. And the culture at that time was that you never use your left hand. And I'm left-handed. So even though I wasn't very good at chopsticks, now I had to take the chopsticks and put them in my right hand and try to eat with the chopsticks in the right hand. Now, the women are not allowed, at that time, the women were not allowed to sit at the table with the men. So I'm the only woman, here are all these men, and all the women are in the kitchen, and they're all cooking, and they're looking, you know, and talking about who this person is, and, you know, you could just see all the energy going on. And I was obviously having a very hard time, because I made the mistake of first lifting up the chopsticks with my left hand. And I want you to know, every face just went. And you could see the women going, oh my God, look what she's just done. You know, how do you say that in Japanese? And I went, oh no. And I went, oh. And of course, they're so gracious. So I realized I'd made a great error. So I put them down, and I attempted to pick them up with the other hand. And one of the women, I don't know whether she was the wife or not, she hurried out, and she came over to, I'm assuming her husband, and whispered in his ear, you know, she's not going to be able to eat this meal because she can't do the chopsticks in the other hand. And so she scurries back into the kitchen, and he has said something to her, and sure enough, they bring out a spoon. And I was able to eat with the spoon, which is so wonderful. But had the situation been any different, you see, the judgment had already started with the left hand, yes? And they could have said, well, she just won't eat. She doesn't know her manners. She doesn't know how to do this. And she's not, you know, we'll finish eating and then she'll go away or whatever. But it wasn't like that because they were willing to make the shift so that I could enjoy the meal. And eating with a spoon with my right hand was much, much easier. And I was able to manage. So I honor that even in cultures where it seems the diversity of energy is so huge, how are you ever going to be able to accept what's in that culture? Because it's so utterly different. But the truth is, the only one who thinks it's different is the ego. The soul knows perfectly every single moment that we're there in that culture. The soul knows everything because it is that divinity that allows us to open and embrace everything around us and give unceasing thanks, you see? So, in my world and in the evolution of what I see going on in the world, we say there's so many things going on where we have peace on one hand and war on another. Let's talk about just the global picture of what things look like. How in the world can we give thanks for this? How do we give thanks for this extreme polarity that is going on and the destruction and mayhem and murder and atrocities? How do we do that? The divine said, when you look upon this, first to acknowledge that this too is in divine order, and you may never know what the divine order of this is in this embodiment. It may not complete itself for many, many, many generations. And have we not seen that already? So it is not for us to judge it, but rather to have compassion for what? Both sides. Both sides. Because both sides are holding whatever they believe is true to such an extent that they would go to war. And to hold it compassionately and to say, if not for who I am now, I might have been chosen to hold one of these, to be one of these. Do you understand? We chose these embodiments to grow in another way, not through war, but the individuals who are in embodiment and who are in war. And there are many wars going on, tribal wars, wars that we can't even imagine. And there are wars going on between couples, are there not? All over this planet. And we have been asked to have compassion for even that which the ego conscious mind will never understand. The ego conscious mind will never understand anything that I just said. But our souls perfectly, perfectly know. And if we will attune with that and allow for that which is the compassion to be present, we do not know what the outcome is going to be. That's none of our business. It is what it is. And we're asked to give thanks for everything. And that thank you is that I can have the compassion in my heart to send compassion to every single person who is at war, whether it's between two people or even the war within. There are many people who suffer the war within. And our compassion for them needs to be just as great as the war we see on the battlefields. And there are so many. So the shift in our consciousness to be able to say, what happens if I relinquish that judgment that I have grown up with and is deeply imprinted in me that I am to judge this? If I let go of that, And I say instead, I will have compassion. Now, when Thich Nhat Hanh was in Vietnam, he went through some very hard times. It was very difficult. And when he finally was able to leave Vietnam, he realized that one of the things that had brought him to the place where he could leave was that he had compassion for what had not only happened to him and his family and everyone around him. He was able to finally do that. And the Dalai Lama likewise. He wrote a beautiful article on this. He said, the one thing that I must practice every day is having compassion for the Chinese. It is a daily practice, and it is very difficult, but I will do my practice. So, I look at these people who are bodhisattva on the earth plane, and each of them, all of them that I know who are bodhisattvas, they have all come through extraordinarily difficult things that could have crushed their spirit and caused them to really say, I will not have compassion for this. But instead, they have said, that is my practice. That is my practice, to have compassion. So even that, which the moment before you said, I cannot give thanks for this, or I cannot have compassion for this, then what is our practice? To say, I can. And it can be in the inchworm fashion, folks. Just that one little bit right there. And then the next day, maybe two more. And then three more. Until finally, it takes 1,000 inchworm steps to make a quantum leap. So, if you say in your heart of hearts, what do I not have compassion for? Right now, just take a moment and say, what don't I have compassion for? And when you have them, just open your eyes and look at me so I know that you have them. Okay? Now, that's all that's needed to begin. Just one small little inchworm step to begin. Now, if you did one inchworm every day, okay? 1,000? About 3 years. Just about 3 years it'll take you to completely dissolve all that energy. Or you could say, well, maybe I'll just take 2 a day and cut it down to 1.5 years. Understand, you can send as much or as little compassion as you want, but if this is all you can do, because everything else in you is shrieking, your ego shrieking, no, no, I can't have compassion for that. I know, been down that trail. I said, I don't want to have compassion for that. And the divine said, dear, do you want to wake up? I said, yes, I want to wake up. Then here's your practice. Here's your practice. And I said, I will do my practice. So we are being invited to take on a level of compassion that is, if everyone in this room did one inchworm step, just that, every day, for even a year, what would happen on the earth plane? Anybody? It would shift. Now, what would happen in the shift? Anybody?
Probably be less of that which we're judging.
Less that of what we're judging. And when we would look upon it, we would not look upon it as polarized to us. Do you understand? We wouldn't say, them over there, right? We couldn't. How could we if we are being compassionate toward them as a group and saying every day a little bit more compassion? Then there's no separation between ourselves and anybody on the planet, no matter what. Now this is huge. Huge. The first time someone said to me, have you given gratitude for every person who's imprisoned in the prisons of the United States of America? I went, I beg your pardon. I mean, is that my ego talking or what? I beg your pardon. The gentleman said, why don't you have compassion for them? I said, because I think they did wrong things and they're in prison. And the gentleman said, just try having compassion for them. their sole agreement was that they would end up there. That's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. They made that sole agreement prior to coming into the body, and they fulfilled it, and now they are in prison. And any one of us could have made that sole agreement. And believe me, in some of our simultaneous past lives, we have thusly been imprisoned. In one way or another, we have been imprisoned. And that's one reason why we've done this. Built the wall, because we know what it is to be imprisoned. And if you don't understand that, then you need to get in touch with all the places where you resist. You know that situation on some deep level. You know it. That's why you do this. If you know it, you do this. Right? If you know it, you do this. So, I then said, I will do that practice. I will take into my consciousness, into my heart, every single person who is in prison. And first I started with the United States, and then I went all the way around the world. I said, okay, because there's so many people imprisoned all around the world. And I just said, I will bring my compassion to every single person who is imprisoned. And then I said, it doesn't even have to look like they're behind bars. If they are imprisoned anyway, I mean, there are women, I don't know about the men, but I know there are women who are imprisoned in countries, and they're in houses. And they're imprisoned in those houses. And it need not be that way, but that's the way it is. And they're fulfilling their soul agreement, and what is mine? What is our soul agreement? That we would compassionately hold every single person who is imprisoned. So, we have our work cut out for us, actually, if we choose to do the work. And it's called the work because we have to align ourselves and say, what part of our day do we give to our service to the planet, to our service to humanity, to our service to everything that is, to all that is? When do we do that? And do we do it faithfully? And do we do it with an open heart? And do we eagerly look forward to that moment when we can sit, align ourselves, and then let that energy just flow into every aspect, whether in form or formlessness, where that energy of love and compassion can be? I mean, I can't wait to do my work. I get up in the morning, I say, boy, I get to do my work now. I do it lying down, by the way. I have trouble sitting up doing it because the energy gets so powerful, it just knocks me down. So I just start lying down. And then I'll be making the calls this evening. I make the calls, I line up, and then I just start doing the work. And sometimes I'll be told, please work with this today. Please, you know, when the tsunami occurred, work with this today. If there's been a major catastrophe somewhere, when the Twin Towers came down, please work with this today. All the souls who are in every catastrophe had a soul agreement prior to coming into the body that they would be part of that. Okay? And that's a pretty far out concept, but that's the truth. We have soul agreements that we make prior to coming into the body that our service may look like a death. Okay? Our service may look like a death. And in these extraordinary energies, such as the tsunami, those who passed said, we will pass. And then those who said, we will move energy to be with those who remain. And it created a sense of humanity that was so exquisite. And every disaster creates that opportunity for humanity to express itself in many different ways. And you might say, why does it take a disaster? Because we become very lethargic, very unaware of what's really going on in the world at large. Unless something is a wake-up call. And these are huge wake-up calls, are they not? And for us to be able to step forward and embrace that is huge. Huge. So I honor that some of the things I'm discussing now, you may go home and say, I'm just exhausted. And that's all right. Because when you begin to embrace the world, when you begin to allow your love and your compassion to go further and further and further beyond just your community or your state or your country, goes way beyond into the global consciousness of all that is, then something else happens. It really does. And we are citizens of the world, my darlings. We're citizens of the world. We are not citizens of the United States of America. I mean, you can be. That's fine. I love being in America. I was really very smart, I think, to choose it because then I had the freedom to do what I had to do. I was born in Brazil, and had I been born a boy, I'd be down there doing military service right now, because that's what happens when you're born in Brazil. But I was lucky. I had that Y chromosome. I said, all right, raised my hand. And my mother said, oh, please let it be a girl. Please let it be a girl. It was wartime. They couldn't get out of Brazil, so I could be born someplace else if I was a boy. So, divine order, soul agreement, born as a girl, finally made it to the United States. And in this place where we live, where there's so much freedom to do whatever we want to do whenever we want to do it, we forget that the rest of the world is not thusly. Probably the slice of the world that really has freedom to do what they want to do when they want to do it is quite small. And the rest of the world is like this. Just like that. And we're holding one polarity, are we not? And they're holding the other polarity. That's what they're doing. So if we do our job, because they're really doing their job, and we can see it all the time, every day, 24 hours a day, what about our job? What about the job that we said we would come and do, and to do it with as much impeccability as possible? Now, if there is love, what is the feeling aspect of love?
Joy.
Joy, thank you. So if you're not in joy, you're not in love. So if you approach this with, oh God, Mary said I better do this, okay. My darlings, if you do not approach this with joy, then that means love is not in the room, not in your heart, not in your head, not happening. You have to see and feel and be energized with the joy that is within you, because your love is the most powerful thing on the planet. Your love, every single one of you. I think we need to say that out loud. My love is the most powerful thing on the planet. It used to be, I worked with a group of people, and we had to stand up to make the calls. And we had to stand up and say, my love is the most powerful thing on the planet. Of course, that wasn't what they said. They were saying other things. But we had to learn how to lift that energy up and bring it out. Because you're going to sit quietly and send your love. So you better be happy about it, because otherwise it's not going to work. It's a waste of time. Don't waste your time. Just open up, you know? Turn the light on. I'm in here. Turn the light on and just send it out there. And instantaneously it will go from you every place that it is needed. You do not have to worry about where it's going to go, folks. It's going to go there, because that's how the energy works. And because you are coming from love, it can only go to those places that are exquisitely marked for it. Cannot miss a beat. It will be there. Likewise on the inner. If there is some work that you feel needs to be done on the inner, if you are sending love, it will go just like that, faster than I can click my fingers. That's how powerful it is. But most people don't understand that. Love has many dimensions. We have romantic love, and we have agape love, and we have love of animals, and love of this, and love of that, and love of chocolate, and love of, you know, whatever it is you love. Okay. But that love is palpable when you're working. When you do your work, you can feel that love. And you should be energized from it, not depleted. You should be energized. You should be able, when you are finished with your work, however you do that, when I call it the work, because it is, you're disciplined, you do it every day. And you step forward, and that radiance and that light will come off of you. It will. It's just, that's the way it is. Because you are so filled with that love within yourself, and it's a wellspring that never stops giving. It constantly gives. And you have to prime the pump, folks. You know what that is, priming the pump? You have to put the water, enough water in, so that the pump can then start what it's doing. Okay. Now, if you practice one day and you say, whoa, that was so great, and then the next day you say, yeah, I'm just too busy to do it. Well, that little priming that you did day one, gone. Unfortunately, how it works in spiritual consciousness is, it is the continuous awareness that you're priming the pump. You're doing your work. So even after I've finished my work, as I'm going through my day, it is continually working. And I'll notice, I'll go, ah, oh, I've just had a realization. Here's where the energy is moving now. Here's where it's working. Oh, this is so beautiful. And then I get busy doing something else. And then suddenly I'll have another awareness. And so it's a continuing thing. It's an ongoing energy. But if you do it and then you say, oh, that was great, but I don't know tomorrow, gosh, I don't know, then maybe it's not your soul agreement to do the work. You know? If it didn't make your heart sing, do not do it. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Your heart should be singing, and you should be saying, this makes me happy, and when I'm finished with the work, I feel that I have done a wonderful energy right now for everyone on the planet and for planet Earth and everything that is and ever shall be. Amen. So, if your heart's not singing, please don't do it. If it makes your heart sing, do it. And then do it with a consistency so that you really get it. And sometimes it just... And I don't know how it works for other people, but for me, I have my time, I do my work, and then I do my walk. And while I'm walking, it just starts, you know? Just the blessings and the energy and, you know, being in nature, and, oh, it's just so incredible. And suddenly, you know, I'll hear a bird song, and it will come exactly at the moment that I'm thinking a particular thought. And then I turn to the sound, wherever the sound of the bird came from, I'll say, thank you. So that was sort of like the highlight of that thought that was held by the song of the bird. Do you know what I'm saying? Ah, it's just remarkable when you align with the energies. And it just, well, life is a miracle. And if we're aware, the miracles happen. And if we're holding the energy and allowing it to flow through us, however it chooses to do so, then the miracles only multiply. And you're building your spiritual muscle, darlings. I have to come back to that. Building that spiritual muscle. This has to be a very strong muscle to be able to do what we're being asked to do. Okay? And with practice, as with everything, as the Divine said to me, and many of you have heard me say this, you could lift a 500-pound weight once and be gone. Or you could lift a 5-pound weight 100 times. And achieve the same thing. Now, I want to take that 5-pound weight. I've done a 500-pound weight, I'll tell you, in this lifetime. But I do the fivers. I like to do the fivers every day. Every day. Just do that 5-pound weight. And it's unbelievable. And when things happen, they'll call me on the phone. People will, and they'll say, oh, Mary, da-da-da. And I'll say, okay, this is what's going on. Because I will know, because I have done the work. Okay? So, however it works for you. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. Just come to the meeting, you'll have a good time, and it'll just be jolly. But if you want to do the work, then it means every day we're building, and this is my last thing, and then we'll say, make the calls. There was a Qigong master, and he said, every time you practice, you lay down one thin sheet of rice paper. Now, rice paper is very small, very thin. One thin sheet of rice paper. And he said, at the end of the embodiment, you will stand upon the mountain that you have created. Which means that every time you practice, you do what? You raise your vibration. And then you raise your vibration. And when you stand upon that mountain, you will have raised your vibration such that you will then be fully enlightened, you will be wide awake, and your leaving the body will be in grace, And it will be beyond the beyond. That's the deal. Now, I want that. Thank you very much. I want to lay down that one thin sheet of rice paper every time I practice. And the vibration, simply by the practice, is raised. And how long will that practice take? Anybody?
As long as it takes.
Excuse me?
As long as it takes.
Yeah?
And what else? It could be an instant.
It could be an instant. An instant. Do you understand? I'm not saying I've got to set my alarm and 2 hours will pass. No, 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 no. You open your heart, your love is there, and you can just go say one Mississippi.
One.
I'm done. I mean, how fast is that? One Mississippi, that's a second. Right? It's just how focused you are. And if you're, you know, all over the place, he's going to take a bunch of them. But if you do this, if you build that spiritual muscle, every second is filled with that potential of consciousness. Always. It never leaves. It is always there, and it is awaiting us. It's awaiting each one of us. It awaits us. Do you understand? The consciousness of all that is in this room, and it awaits us. But if we do not do our work, it just keeps awaiting. It's never going to leave. It's here 24/7, has been for all eternity. The divine said, "You are the thoughts that are in my mind." The divine has created each one of us. Each one of us is a thought. We are held in the mind of the divine. We never leave the mind of the divine. And whatever the embodiment is, it is fully realized right now. Fully realized right this minute. All you have to do is do your work. If you do your work, it's going to happen. Wow! Now, how hard is that? When everybody says, "My God, it's so hard to wake up," I said, "You got to be kidding me." But it's who makes it hard?
The ego.
The ego makes it hard. The ego says, "It's got to be hard. Because then I can complain about how hard it is to wake up." Oh, yes, I know you, poor darling. Oh, my God, I totally understand. And it's so hard for me, too, and I'm having such a hard time waking up. Not really. Now, probably if anybody else wasn't in this room, and we're recording this, by the way, would hear this, they'd say, "She is so full of," can I say it, BS? They would say, "Oh, no, 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 that can't be real." And I'm telling you, folks, it's the real deal. It's the real deal.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Truly, truly. And there's more. And I want to acknowledge that your presence here tonight, because I asked before the meeting started, I said, "Well, you know, who's going to be here and what am I supposed to talk about?" And then when the heat wasn't on, ixnay that, you're going to talk about something else. When I make the calls, these calls have been made for almost 100 years, and I hope to live until they're done, 100 years. It's come through the feminine line of consciousness. The calls have changed over the years as the consciousness on the planet has changed. When I make the calls, they are directed into both that which is the infinite and that which is the finite, that which is formless and that which is in form. And as you are sitting here and I am making the calls, just allow the energy to resonate down through and into you. And then we will sit for a few moments. And then at the end of the calls, I will then have a small closing prayer, which I will make. And I appreciate it if your feet are flat on the ground. And what's going to happen while you're sitting here is this. From the heart of Mother Earth, there's going to be a stream of energy which has already started. I can feel it in my feet. It's going to come up through the soles of your feet. It's going to come up through your body. It's going to come into your heart. It's going to extend beyond your body into the formless and into what I call the heart of God. Then coming from the heart of God, there will descend an energy of pure love that will come through your crown chakra, down through your physical body, down through the soles of your feet, and into the heart of Mother Earth. And that energy will continue to circulate and move while we're sitting in the silence. I'd like to make the calls. I call now for the light of the divine to create a perfect circle of love, light, peace, and joy around all who are present here in the physical and also on the inner planes. I wish to acknowledge and give thanks for all souls who gathered to be with us, whether in or out of embodiment, and for the radiance in which we find ourselves. Thank you. I call now for the infilling and indwelling of the divine within all of our bodies, planes, and cells. I acknowledge and give thanks for this and for the divine consciousness that is available to us 24 hours a day unceasingly. Thank you. I call now that we enter into the serene center of our being within our hearts, and there we enter the silence, allowing ourselves to fall more deeply still in love with the divine which we are. Thank you. And I open my heart, and I bring you, Gaia, beloved Mother Earth, into my heart. Thank you, Gaia, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. And thank you, Mother, for loving us and nurturing us through each and every one of our embodiments. Thank you, Mother. I love you. And I open my heart, and I bring you, beloved elementals of earth, air, fire, and water, into my heart. Thank you, dear elementals. Thank you for your union and communion with Mother Earth and your union and communion within every cell of our physical body. For without you, we could not exist upon the earth plane. Thank you for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, dear beloved elementals. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring the whole of humanity into my heart. Thank you, beloved souls. All souls who are in the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. All souls who are leaving the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And all souls who are coming into the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And to my soul, thank you. I love you. Thank you, dear beloved souls, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you,